What's the movie Bill Murray was in? Groundhog Day? Is it Groundhog Day? Where he said at some point, after going through things, cycling and cycling and cycling, he's trying to explain that he says, I'm God. And he's saying, I'm not the God. You know, I'm not the one creating the DNA and the trees and all that. I am a God. And that's the message of that book. That's the message of what we're saying here, is that we are in our own world. Remember, the very beginning of all of this, when I asked you, are you 100% responsible for everything you experience in your life? And every single one of you said yes. You are God over yourself. Dear closer.
Thank you. I just wanted to know what is the conclusion for that question.
He wants to know what the conclusion is to the question, how do you know what is ego or divine? Did we come to a conclusion? Okay, she's going to answer.
But I'm listening to you because I don't know what the divine is either.
Well, I don't know what the divine is either. You know, as soon as we describe what the divine is, as soon as we put a name on it, even putting the name on it, divine, is trying to describe it, we are then removing ourselves from the divine. I'm saying it is that background to everything that you are experiencing. It's the background to your thoughts. It's the background to your feelings. It's the background to your emotions. It's the background to your physical sensations. It's the background to you witnessing all of that. The average person, in my opinion, walking the street, doesn't know that they can witness their thoughts. They have thoughts and they respond to the thoughts. I'm saying going past the witness to the whiteboard, to the source. I'm calling that the divine. Beyond that, I don't know what that is. We can all be from Martian DNA or something. I don't know. Yes?
I just wanted to add to anybody that may be listening. I don't know if this applies to anybody in this room, but there are many people in this world who believe in a God that exists way outside of themselves, and that they believe that God has every control over their life, and so they totally give up control of their life, and they pray to this God to help them. And I don't think that that's where this ideology is coming from. This ideology is there is a God that we can't understand and that we are part of in all aspects, our physicality, our mentalness, our vibration, everything is part of God. So we are trying to get in touch with that part of God, and we are not looking outside, giving up control of our life to an external supposed person that walks on streets of gold.
One of the things that I've done in my meditation teachings and some of my studies is it's a lot of vibrational work, and that our bodies, our egos, our human state that we're in is like this big compared to how big we are. Our whatever you want to call it, your light body, your structure, whoever you are, goes out and expands and expands and expands. And from my belief system, we're all one. We are all God. We are the God. We are all part of the same thing, and we're little pieces of that going out and experiencing things, and it's all feeding back to the same thing. So our bodies, our consciousness right here is like our toe compared to how big we really are. And what you said earlier was something about you don't see the bigger picture. I had a friend tell me years ago, pretend you're driving a car, God or whoever you want to say it, sitting next to you with the map. You just have to go where you're told to go. You can't see the map. You don't know the big picture, and you don't know what's best and where to go. So if you just tune in and you listen, you're going to get there in the best, easiest, most beneficial way. If you start saying, well, I don't think I'm supposed to turn here and all that, then you're second-guessing something that's there for your benefit to guide you that does see that bigger picture.
Uh-huh. On your point of the whiteboard, I mean, Deepak Chopra talks about nothingness, nothingness.
Yes.
That whole, you know, there was a Big Bang Theory, well, what was before the Big? And the field of all possibilities. We are in the field, and we are part of that, and we are a holographic piece of that nothingness, that nothingness. And when we align with that, as you're talking about, and clear to that, then we can get to it. One thing that comes to my mind in hearing this discussion, people are bringing up, I mean, I work very hard on clearing this, but when I would hear, you know, this or something better, or trust and let God, I would always think, well, yeah, but God's always going to do that for somebody else, but not me. So how could I get to that point? And I think that may be where, you know, your divine ego is coming in saying, well, that's great, and God is the universe and spectacular, but that's not for me. because, you know, whatever you're coming to. So if you can get to that clearing, and that's why I think that it's simple, the concept you're bringing across is simple of clearing and divine. And for me, I see it's easier than having the conversations with other people because I can cut through all those circuits. I can do the hard, I'm willing to do the work, and I can do it in a clear channel. And that may be just a piece that some people listening to this and here too may be struggling with, of that divine, and is it, you know, it is for your better good, and your better good is not some kind of shame kind of good. It's good. It's all good.
It's all good. Yes, thank you. Well, I'm very excited, very thrilled with the way this is going. I have a lot of surprises in store for you. Some of you know about the movie The Secret. How many of you have seen it? But not everybody has seen it, okay? I'm going to arrange for all of you to see it. Not here, but I have a copy of the DVD for everybody. You will all get a copy of the DVD, and we'll arrange for that after lunch. And there's some stories about this that are pretty breathtaking, including how I got into it. If you haven't seen it, I am in it, as well as Jack Canfield, Bob Proctor, John Assaroff, and a bunch of other people that you probably know the names of. So we want to talk about The Secret. We want to talk about some of the power and techniques in it. And then I have a major gift for you that will help you make all of your dreams come true. And I got chills racing up and down my spine, huh? What a tease. Yes, yes. She says, there's a teaser and I'll go eat chicken. But... You know, I am a he just said it. I want you to come back. This is the marketing guy. This is the marketing guy in me using the hypnotic power of curiosity. None of you know what the big gift is. You can see there's boxes over there. They're filled with something. All you know so far is you've had coconut. And Amy, the coconut is to help us reconnect to the divine. It's also good for you. It's organic. Suzanne picked it up. So in case you weren't here to hear what that story was. So, we got The Secret. I have that book that she has over there that I'll be handing out. I'll do all of that after lunch. And yes, that is my hypnotic command, to be sure that you come back at 1:30 so you have time to eat, go for a little walk, stretch a little bit, share, drink a lot of water, then come back for a exhilarating afternoon. This is just a warm-up. See you soon. Did you all like the $100 bills that were sitting on your chairs when you came in? Oh, who was the first person in? Do you like the books and the t-shirts that are left? Good, good. And then, of course, there's a mustard seed that I've given everybody, which is kind of like my little reminder. It's one of my tools that I use to be in the moment and to also trust. I remember giving a talk one time about the mustard seed, and I think it was spontaneous at the moment when I realized that, you know, a mustard seed has no doubt about what it's going to become. And so if all of us had that same kind of trust in whatever it is that we are wishing for, intending, manifesting, wanting to be in alignment for, we would grow into whatever that divine wanted us to be. In this case, the mustard seed has already, from the divine, written its script. So it's a nice little reminder, and then I like the little phrase, which I can't read without my glasses on the back, but we all know basically about going for the impossible, and you can move mountains too. So I love that, and I love dreaming big, and that's one of the messages that's in The Secret. And some of you have seen The Secret, correct? But not all of you have. Does anybody want to give kind of like a synopsis, a short version of what The Secret is all about? Somebody want to jump in and do that?
The reason I liked it as much as I did and the reason I have seen it 5 times is that it is the consolidation of thinking. And it is exemplified by all these various speakers in a different form and a fashion. And it's said in such a way that the lay person, the person who's not necessarily the law of attraction scholar, can get it. And I feel very comfortable. In fact, I bought the DVD after the first time seeing it, so that my mother could see it with me. And she saw it with me at 89 and liked it. It's something I want to give. It's something that I want to make sure that the people that are in my life, I can't tell you the countless people I've driven to the website. And I even, for my nephew, paid for him to go to my website, gave him my password to download so he could have see it himself. I just think it's that good.
And you, yeah. And you didn't even say what the secret is.
No.
Well, does anybody want to say what the secret is? It's a secret, yes. And you can go to whatisthesecret.tv to go check it out. But does anybody want to say what the secret is? She says law of attraction, but does anybody want to expand on it that's seen the movie? Yeah,
maybe I missed it. I didn't come away with just one secret. I came away with a lot of them. So that's the one, all built around law of attraction, all built around the fact that we attract into our lives the things that we declare with intention as energy. But I came away with a lot more than that. So.
Like what?
Like you're a bulldog.
Like I'm a bulldog? I don't remember that being in the movie. You've seen the movie.
No,
am I a bulldog in the movie?
Yeah, no, he was like totally charismatic guy. Big energy.
A shaman or a shaman?
Shaman, yeah.
Yeah. A big shaman energy. Sounded bad. Yeah. I know what you meant, though. Yes.
I just wanted to say that in my little town, we've been sharing it with like viewing parties. People come over to my house, and I've done that before with really good movies like What the Bleep and so on. Yet this time, everyone left going to buy the movie themselves. We'd all just seen it, but they all wanted to have it and share it. And it's been shared with some of the local private schools in our area.
Wow.
And I know those teachers, after leaving my house, went to purchase a copy, and I just love that. And it is. It's the simplest description of the law of attraction, and I think from what I'm getting or hearing from other people is they're getting it. They just are accepting it after hearing it for a long time.
Are others having that notice too?
Yeah.
You're seeing that people are watching it and awakening or changing?
Yeah, and I think the production of it was one of the things, aside from the message, but for people who are new to the idea of the law of attraction, the way that it was produced, the way that it had each one of the people speaking and having interaction had a different energy about them. Of course, their credentials underneath let people's brains come into them with a different point. And I think that was a very powerful part of all walks of life, male and female, different things that they were doing. They had different energy about them. Their language was slightly different, but they were all talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think it let people, my experience talking to other people about it who weren't really, you know, think this is too out there.
Yeah.
It could sit with them better because they could enter at different points and find one of those people to connect with, which let them listen and hear more to one of the other people that were there. So the production of it was, I think,
yeah, outstanding.
Very
Do you all know about Eve Gregory and the 30-day experiment that's going on right now based upon The Secret? There's a woman, Eve Gregory.
Eva Gregory.
Eva. That's good.
Oh,
Eva.
I know Eva. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Eva Gregory.
Yeah.
And she started on May 16th, the 30-day experiment that's based on The Secret. And we're all to focus on one thing in our lives that we're looking to manifest. And if I remember correctly, there's almost 2,000 people that are part of this worldwide. I'll get the right website that you can download. She's got it, that you can download the May 16th audio. They got everything started, and then there's a Yahoo group. But anyway, she's trying to collectively put together this worldwide organization of like-minded people to manifest whatever
it
is.
I love it.
It's excellent.
Yeah, Eva does great stuff. I didn't know who you were referring to. She and her friend have a radio show. Well, that's great to know. You will all get to see The Secret because I have copies of it for everybody. So you'll be able to watch it at your leisure. Now, let me tell you how I ended up in this. Because this all ties into manifestation. I would say a year or so ago, I was writing out in my magic journal, which is just a simple journal that I declared was magical, and I wrote out what I wanted to have achieved within the next 6 months. And the secret to writing in the magic journal is to write it as if you've already attained it. This is something I talk about in step 4 in the attractor factor, where you write something out as if it's already manifested, and how would it feel right now if you already had the house or the car or the spouse or the whatever it happens to be, fill in the blank. And I wrote down that I wanted to be in a movie. And I remember writing down at the time that, you know, I've now been in the movie and it's been this big success and I had a great part in it and it was easy and effortless. I wrote all that fun stuff down. And I remember my mind telling me that is nuts. That is not attainable. That is not within reach. You don't know movie stars. I've met a few celebrities, you know, from reading my blogs and stuff, but I'm certainly not in that world. So how am I going to end up in a movie? Well, what I've learned is that being focused on how will trip you up. It will prevent you from going for the big dream. Even when inspiration comes through and it's like the divine telling you to do something, you could talk yourself out of it by saying, I don't know how to do that. When the inspiration comes and says, do a manifestation weekend, and I could have said, no, I don't have any idea how to do that. And the whole thing would have died. And inspiration, divine, would have to go to somebody else and knock on their door and say, will you do it? Because Joe Vitale won't do it. So, for whatever reason, inspiration came and told me to pretend you're in a movie. So I wrote down that I would be in a movie. I did not know how I would be in a movie. No clue whatsoever. I just thought, this is for the fun of it. This is another clue. It was for the fun of it. I had no attachment. I had no addiction. I had no need. My life did not depend on my being in a movie. This is a key to going beyond manifestation. No part of me had any desire for approval by being in a movie. I just thought it would be fun. It would be fun. It would be playful. It was a playful possibility. I wrote it down as if it had already happened. I forgot about it. It seems like it was only weeks later, it might have been a month later, that I got a phone call from a woman in Australia who said that she worked in the movie and film business for 30-some years, for decades. She had read The Attractor Factor because a friend of hers in Maui told her about it. She read The Attractor Factor and she wanted to make a movie based on The Attractor Factor. Well, I didn't know this woman at all. She's a call out of the blue. Out of the blue is kind of a code word here, you know, for things coming out of the inspiration. So it came out of the blue. But a part of me was thinking, you know, this woman could be a flake. I don't know who she is at all. So I was professional. I was polite. I was nice. I listened to her. And she wanted to know if I got it all together, would I appear in the movie? Well, certainly. If you get it all together, give me a call. Hung up. Never thought I'd hear from her again. So probably 2 months later, 6 weeks, 2 months later, something like that, I got a phone call from somebody saying it was Rhonda's assistant, Rhonda being the woman who called me from Australia, and they were now filming people for the movie, which is being called The Secret. And I was still a little skeptical, and apparently they've run into this before because they had a film teaser already made. That's the one that you ended up seeing online, but I got to see it a half a year early. And they sent it to all the people they wanted to be in the movie, including me. So I went over, took a look at it, and my jaw dropped. If you remember the first time you saw the teaser for The Secret, you knew that this was spine-tingling, this was off the charts, this was wonderful, this was riveting, this was hypnotic. It was a mesmerizing, one of the best TV or movie teasers I had ever seen in my life. And so I easily said, yes, I want to be in this. I want to be involved in any way, shape, or form. Put me in it, let me market it, tell me whatever, just let me be part of this whole blossoming. And shortly after that, they found a time frame for me. They flew me to Chicago, first class. Picked me up in a limo. Nice. Takes me up to a five-star hotel in Chicago where they wine and dine me, and I meet the most wonderful people. I have rarely been in a situation where everybody involved in a project was in alignment with the project totally. You know, you've usually been in situations where there's a group involved and somebody doesn't want to be there, or they're doing it at minimum wage, and it's like the McDonald's mentality, or just they're just not in alignment with the flow of the project itself. Everybody was in alignment with The Secret. Right down to, I remember being in this studio room, which I had made out of a hotel suite, and there's the makeup person, there's the camera person, somebody's operating lights, somebody's looking at a script, somebody's setting up some high technology that they needed to have, somebody's watching a computer, so there's a bunch of people in the room. And they had asked me to tell a particular story, which I told them, well, this is going to be a tearjerker when I tell it, and I will probably be crying at the end of it, so this will have to be the last thing we do today. And they agreed to that. That was all fine. And I told the story, which did not end up in the movie, but it's relevant for another reason. I told the story, and I had tears in my eyes, like I told them I would. I looked up, and the interviewer had tears in her eyes. The makeup person had tears in her eyes. The camera person had tears in his eyes. The guy running the script and looking at the computer had tears in his eyes. Everybody was in the moment. Everybody was in alignment with this. I knew that however this was given birth, and I can't help but feel that this came from inspiration, that everybody involved was attracted on some inspired level, gave birth to a true masterpiece. And I told him from day one, I said, I will do whatever it takes to tell the world about this because I believe this can awaken humanity. Now, from the Ho'oponopono standpoint, the only person that has to awaken is me. You know, it's not a matter of me getting it out there to the world. It's a matter of me fully living it and cleaning myself of anything that's in the way of this being broadcast or attracted. So, of course, the marketing behind it has been a legendary case study in itself. Craig and I have talked about it many times, how they teased all of us for months. It was almost like they had no mercy. You know, they kept saying the movie's coming, but we never knew when. And, of course, when they finally did release it, the people in Australia and the people in New Zealand could not see or buy the movie because of some kind of legal rights that were going on. You could watch it online if you weren't in those countries by paying $5 to watch it at your computer or paying $20. I think it's gone up to $30 now, but $20 to buy the DVD and have it shipped to you. So it has been an amazing success. It is still in bidding wars where national television stations, network TVs are trying to be the first to air it live on television. What these people did, again, breaking all rules, was by being the first to air it on the internet and creating an internet movement around this. So it's been a fascinating process. A couple of my favorite stories in here is the one by Jack Canfield, who we now know and count as a friend, is a remarkable guy. When he talked about first learning about the power of intention, the power of attraction, and the power of directing your mind, and he was making, and I forget the sum, but it was a low amount, like $20,000 a year. It could have been less. It was $8,000 a year. Okay, it was very, yeah, you've seen it five times. She would know. Yeah, $8,000 a year. And he played with the possibility of making, as I remember, $100,000. And he did not make $100,000. He made 96 or 97. 92. Nothing like being corrected. I'm the expert, all right. 92 plus 8 is on, yeah. Well, so he was making 8, he asked for 100, he made 92, and I still remember the line where he said, did we consider this to be a failure? But he didn't make the 100. He didn't make it. He didn't reach it. And I imagine a very, very skeptical person might say, see, it didn't work. I love you, yes, I love you, thank you, please forgive me. And I love what he did next, by his wife encouraging him to go for $1 million. And of course, making it. So there's real dreams and possibilities. Bob Proctor is wonderful in it. He's in this a lot, but he's very articulate in explaining things. And in one of the special features, there's, I don't know if everybody has seen that, but have seen the DVD, there's a special feature of Bob Proctor talking to you about The Secret and the Law of Attraction for like 5 to 10 minutes. It's a very articulate, concise presentation. The other story that I really liked in here is about the guy who had been in a plane crash and was disabled. He was basically, as I remember, like Christopher Reeves had been, and that he was basically dead from the neck down. And I still remember him saying that the only thing he had to work with was his mind. Oh my God, that's all he had to work with. He is now walking. This is amazing. I still get chills when I think about this. I don't know who this, I've never met this guy, I've never heard him speak. Supposedly he's on the speaking circuit, supposedly he's writing a book about his journey, but he's in the movie. And he's talking to you, you know, and moving around and all those things that he was told he would never be able to do. So this is why I believe in magic and miracles. I believe in going for what a lot of other people might think is impossible. On my business card it has three words. It's an ancient 16th century Latin phrase that means dare something worthy. Dare something worthy. So sometimes when inspiration is coming through and it's nudging you to do something that seems like, wow, this is really big or something I've never done before, and it's really pushing the brain chemistry to give you the signal that, you know, this is out of my comfort zone, well, it may just be asking you to dare something worthy and to do something bigger than ever before. To back up, how I got into this, I wrote down in a magic book how I wanted to achieve it, as if it had already been achieved. So I have a couple major gifts for you. One, of course, is your own copy of The Secret, which we'll pass out secondly or in a moment here. The other, and I'm really tickled with this, I have a magic journal. And these things, how much do you think you should pay for one of these? I'm not doing a very good lead up. As I already told you, it's free. Yeah, it's $100,000. I liked what she said right over there. $100,000 each. It's certainly worth that. Each one of these is handmade in India. Each one of these is hand-painted in India. So each one of these is unique. It's on recycled cotton paper, so it is very eco-friendly. None of these have been opened. They were packaged in India and then sent over here. So what I'm going to be doing is passing these out, and let this be your manifestation journal. The secret to making this work is that when you write in this, you have to write about what it is that you want to do, be, or have as if it has already passed. It's like a future diary. You're pretending that today is done or tomorrow is done, and you're writing at the end of the day about what you received or what you experienced, writing down the way you would like it to be. This is your way of petitioning the divine. This is your way of requesting from the universe the things you would like to have. There has to be balance. We talked earlier about step 5 in the attractor factor. You have to let go. You have to let go of knowing how. Because you may write down that I was just in a blockbuster movie that did better than Joe Vitale's movie. You know? You know, whatever's going to come to you. And you have to be sure that you write down truthfully what is correct for you, what feels right for you. You can't be caught up in the how. You're not going to write down how that's going to happen. You may write down about the movie experience, but you're not going to write down if you get the phone call from somebody. Or because Joe met James Caan, maybe he'll introduce me to James Caan, and that'll introduce me to... No, that's too convoluted. And that's not how the universe works. The divine can open up doors that we can't even imagine in the most surprising ways and absolutely dazzle you with what takes place. You don't need to know how. And that is a big stumbling block for most of us, and myself included. Because we start thinking of what we want, and then we start thinking of all the different ways we can achieve it. You don't have to do that. You'll be inspired to do that. You'll be put in situations where people will be attracted to you, and it'll be up to you to be alert. This is the key. You have to be alert to those opportunities, and then what do you have to do? Take action. Take action. That's your part of the promise. That's your part of the deal. That's the arrangement. Do you have any clue how powerful this is? She has a clue. So what kind of questions do you have about either the secret or about using the journal? Because what I'm going to do is give you some time to... write down in your magic journal. Yes, Amy.
Can you provide some example?
Okay. She's asking for an example, which I'll give in a minute, and I saw you had your hand up. Yeah. So, that's a great question. I no longer put dates. I did put dates for a while, but that's also controlling. And I'm finding that if I'm really trusting, if I'm really turning this over to the divine, to the universe, and allowing it to play out in its own divine time, you know, I don't know the timing that it should be. I don't know if it should be tomorrow, next week, next year, or ever. So I have found not putting a time on it is better for me. You know, and all of this is subject to experimentation. Somebody else have a question?
One of the things I came across with journaling early on was I found myself writing down things that I thought I should want, right?
Yeah.
Instead of things that I actually wanted. So
Yeah. Just
thought, get your comments on that. Mostly I found that out when I wrote it down. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. Just like when I was in 18 or so in high school, I thought I had to have a, you know, huge mansion with a swimming pool and all that kind of stuff. And that's a good example of something that I don't really actually care about, you know, having a 10,000 square foot mansion with, you know, a Rolls Royce and all that. I mean, you'd think like, well, I should write down something big, right? Something important, but, you know, I don't actually care about that. Sometimes it took writing it down to realize that it didn't really have any energy behind it.
I think one of the big keys here is that you want to have fun. What you're going to write down are all the things that would be an absolute delight to have to experience, to have, to be, to feel. Mandy Evans is a wonderful person that I talk about in my Attractor Factor book and probably in a couple other books. She does the option process, which is a way of cleaning beliefs by questioning beliefs. She has pointed out that when she does her workshop, she invites people to take out a sheet of paper, and if you have something now much more noble than that, you know, your own magic journal here, your future diary, your own magic book. And she says to have them write down what they would just welcome into their life if it fell out of the clear blue sky. Now here's that clear blue sky again. You know, we could have called this the clear blue sky workshop. You know, and maybe it would have made sense too. The clear blue sky. So if it came from the clear blue sky and you would welcome it into your life and it would be fun for you to have, there's a playfulness to it. There's not a need. There's not a should. There's not an addiction. There's not any sort of attachment to it. It's something that it would be thrilling. It would be fun. Much like me writing down that I've now been in this movie that's a big hit and is popular. I don't remember the exact phrase. But it was a very simple statement that meant something to me. And I did not need it to happen. It was not a should. Nobody was saying, oh, Joe, you'd be a better marketer or better author or better best-selling whatever if you were in a movie. None of that was there. And so there was no need, no attachment. It was all playful. I would certainly welcome it out of the clear blue sky. That's what I wrote down. And that's what I would encourage you to write down. So I'm going to be giving you some time to do this. So ask your questions so that you are clear about what's going to be happening here. Because it should be really fun. Mark Victor Hansen does sell a book called, I think his is called Future Diary. I've never seen it, but I think it is like a diary where you go out into the future and you write down what you want to have or what you've already accomplished. It's a similar theory. But he writes down hundreds and hundreds of things. When somebody asked him how many goals he had going on at any one time, he said something like 6,000. You know, it's just off the charts because he writes them down all the time. There's a beauty to doing that because when he writes it down, he also forgets it. This is a clue. When you write it down, it's like sending a message to the universe. You can also say you're sending it into your unconscious mind. However you want to look at this biochemistry, I'm looking at it from the divine. I'm saying you're sending it into your unconscious. That connection to the divine is going to pick up the signal. Whether you get it or not is up to the divine. It's not up to you. It's step five. You choose, but you don't decide. You have to let go. We're still working within those five steps of the process. But what I have found, and if you remember from the attractor factor, I say this, somewhere in the early stages, it might have been in step two, I say write out your goals that Brian Tracy had written down, that if you write down the things that you would want to experience and then check your list a year from now, 80% of them will have happened without you thinking about them. You have kind of put in an order to your mind, to the universe, and it will start rearranging your life and putting you into situations where these things will come about when you've already forgotten them. And I find that it works better if you do forget about them. You know, and I do know that there are goal-setting teachers out there that tell you to be pretty obsessed about your goals, to think about them night and day, to dream about them night and day. And I would say that that probably works for them. Their belief behind it probably makes it work. I'm teaching people an easier way. What I told Marissa years ago when we first met and what I've said in my book is that there is a rocky road up the mountain, a rocky road to the divine, if you will, but there's also an escalator. I found the escalator. And I'm telling people, you can go up the rocky road if you want. Some people like mountain climbing. You know, you might want to struggle and enjoy that process and feel very great for your, about yourself because you did it. Or go around the other side of the mountain and there's an escalator. And you push up, and you just kind of glide. I like the escalator. You know, every now and then I get off and get all bruised and everything and think, oh yeah, I want to go back to the escalator again. I don't know what that's like. So what we're talking about here is really letting go, having fun and letting go. Do you have a question?
One is there a, I was asked this the other day, I have what's called an abundance journal that I give to my, I teach a class called Education and Destiny, and they fill out an abundance journal, which is somewhat similar to this, except they're attaching whatever that they're going to do in a day with a specific core value, such as instead of meeting with Bob, it's increased prosperity / meeting with Bob, or whatever they have as a core value. So that they can just see eventually just increased their diary, their day planner looks like something completely different at the end of the deal. But one of them asked me, is there anything wrong with writing this out on a computer? Because I don't like to write by hand. I get cramps. So I was going to ask you that.
Oh.
And then I was also going to ask you if, as far as saying things that are in the future, are you saying, as opposed to like standing in front of a mirror when you're, you know, 50 pounds overweight and saying, I am sexy and thin, and, you know, and when you're not, your subconscious is going, no, you're not, no, you're not. Like, you say, you're saying, like, in you're saying, it used to do it with a date, or, like,
right.
It's spring, or it's in the future, and now I feel this because I am this. Is that what you're telling us?
I am not dating it. It is present time when I write it. I am, on one level, I'm lying to myself, if you want to look at it that way. On another level, I am programming myself with deep emotion. And there's two major ways to change. It's repetition and it's emotion. And so what I am doing is really fueling the emotion part. If you remember step four in the attractor factor, is I call it Nevilleizing your goal because it was named after Neville Goddard, or Goddard Neville, I think was his actual name, who talked about the way to create or manifest things in your life is that you had to visualize it with feeling. I am a hypnotherapist. I have worked in the mental imagery world. I know about psychocybernetics and all the other ones that you can talk about to talk about the power of visualization. There is power in visualization, but you accelerate the process beyond belief. You turn on the afterburners when you put feeling with it. So when I am writing down something that I want to have happen, it is as if it has already happened with the greatest joy, the most feeling, writing it out the way that I want it to be, totally. And in that moment when I'm writing it, it's real. If it's not real, it means that I didn't write something in there to make it real. There's some part of me that's hedging the bet a little bit. And then the first part of what you're talking, with the core value type thing, it sounds a little bit like we're still stuck with the how. In other words, we're saying that we want to go and do this this meeting with such and such because it's going to help me increase my bottom line. I think that we're still looking with the how there, and what we want to do is get away from the how. Now, it may serve your clients. I'm not saying dismiss it, but I'm trying to take everybody beyond where they've been before, including myself. I'm in for the ride here, too. And we want to look at not ever being caught up with how. We want to look at what do you want? What do you want to have, do, or be? What do you want to experience? When you write it in your book, you want to write it as if it's already happened. This is your own personal journey. You should not be sharing it with anybody else. You should write your name in it and then keep it with you and sleep on it at night and all of that kind of stuff. I won't be asking you to read from it. And you shouldn't be sharing it with anybody or letting other people read it. Even though this is a supportive group, if you feel inspired to do that, then do it. But my feeling is that you keep it to yourself. You lock that energy within you, and it's an agreement between you and the divine. As for writing it out on the computer, which is part of what you were asking, there's nothing wrong with doing it that way. I have found, because of my age and how I grew up, that it's far more natural for me to write in handwriting. You know, I didn't have a computer when I was going to school, and some of you didn't, some of you did. Whatever's natural for you. Handwriting to me is a direct connection to my unconscious mind, which is connected more to the divinity than my conscious mind is. So it's better for me to write it out in handwriting. So I'm a gadget guy, I got computers, Blackberries, laptops, you know, I would like to do it that way. Yes, sir.
I was thinking about categories of, areas of life, such as health issues versus business issues and relationship things. I can't help myself. I have that structural slant.
Yes.
There are a couple ways to do it. It's stream of consciousness where you just start writing and they're all mishmashed together, or making 10 pages on about health, the next 10 pages on other things. Thoughts about that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it can go any way you want it to go. You know, I would follow the basic guidelines about making sure that the stuff you would welcome if it came out of the clear blue sky, and making sure that you write it down as if it's already happened. And if that means writing 10 pages, that's a mismatch, or it's writing 10 pages on each particular subject, that's up to you. I like the idea of something I learned when I was in the Mental Toughness Institute program, which some of you have been curious how I've lost a lot of weight and so forth after struggling with it all of my life. I had set an intention about waking up one day and being in this healthy, fit body and being in some fitness contests and all of this stuff. I had written it out. The first thing that happened is I got severely depressed. I thought, how? How? You know, looking for the how, and especially if you've already struggled with it most of your life and you know that diets don't work and all of that kind of stuff. It was probably the very next day after writing out my little journal about how I wanted it to be that I got an email out of the blue, once again, from somebody endorsing the Mental Toughness Institute for Weight Control. Never heard of it. So I looked at it because I thought, this is a little too uncanny. You know, I'm not on the list to get this. I don't usually get this. This is the day after I've stated this intention. I got to take a look. And I was uncomfortable about it because I thought, this is strange. It's too weird. It's out of place. They didn't want all that much money. That wasn't a big deal. But my other rule of thumb is, if I'm afraid to do something, I know I must do it. So, with that agreement, I signed up for it. And it turned out to be a process of awakening. It turned out to be a process of realizing, yeah, diets do work. You can go on all kinds of diets and you'll lose weight. You know, it's more of a lifestyle change, though, that's what's needed. And they walked me through it. Now, the really wonderful thing with them, I went through their program 3 times. I even promoted it on the 2nd or 3rd time because they had trouble getting people into it. And after I had gone through it, I lost 80 pounds. I was on the other side of it and everything. They don't offer the program anymore. And they told me, if you want to offer it, or you want to do segments of it, you want to take our ideas and promote it, go right ahead. It was like, did this just show up for me? I mean, did the divine call them up in Florida and say, hey, you people with the mental toughness stuff, get one going for weight control, because some guy in Texas has got to need it, and after he's all done, you can shut it down. That's the kind of bizarre thing that happens to me when I just cover the things that I want. And I wasn't thinking in particular like, oh, I hadn't taken care of health before. It wasn't the category I was going after. I was looking at the different areas that I felt like I was lacking in. And in that particular time, I was saying, man, I'm successful in just about every area I can look at, but I haven't been successful here. I got to do something about this. And so that's where I put a focus, I put intention, I had a lot of clearing work to do, and a lot of that came from the Mental Toughness Institute for Weight Control. They still have a Mental Toughness Institute, but it's not about weight control at all. They focus on making sales and improving business and leadership skills and all of that good stuff. So again, it goes back to what feels right to you. But don't get caught up in the how. Don't go saying, okay, I'm going to state my intention and tomorrow I'm going to get an email. Because it may not come from email ever. It may come from a carrier pigeon that flies through the window. You know? You don't have any idea. You don't have a clue. Isn't that a what? Which part? Yeah. Okay, so he's asking, I have to repeat that because I didn't give him the mic. Wasn't that a need for somebody who's in poverty wanting to be prosperous, that they're being propelled by the need, or me being overweight wanting to be slender, being propelled by the need? If you look at the attractor factor, the first step is to know what you don't want. The very first step is to know what you don't want. The person who's in poverty doesn't want to be in poverty. They want out of poverty. So that leads them to step two, to intend what they do want, to choose what they do want, to write it out. At that point, they're not coming from need. They're coming from their desire. They've shifted. The need was what springboarded them into a new way of viewing things. The vast majority of people who are out there walking the streets right now who are in need are stuck in need. There's a wonderful quote on The Secret by Bob Proctor. I laugh every time I see it because I know so many people that fall into it, where he talks about, he says, if you're in debt and you're trying to get out of debt, you will stay in debt. You are stuck on the same level that creates debt. You got to take it to a different level. So that would be step one in the attractor factor. And step two, it would be taking it to, how would you like it to be? If it came out of the clear blue sky, what would you welcome into your world? So it's taking it to a new level. On one level, you are in need. On another level, you've now upped it to desire or something more, even more noble than that. That's the word that comes to mind at this point. But great observation. I love these questions. Boy.
Know what you don't want. You don't want to focus on what you don't want because you attract more of it. So you shift it to what you do want, and then you start creating, which is not a need. It's creating.
Yeah. There's a whole different energy that comes from that place of welcoming it out of the clear blue sky as opposed to welcoming it if you're in poverty and you're just trying to struggle your way out of it. Because a basic rule in psychology that's something I learned from Win Wagner, a great guy that you need to be reading. He wrote a book called Beyond Einstein. Yeah, you know his work? He's a genius. I've gotten to interview him for my Hypnotic Gold series, and I've known him for almost 20 years. I've never met him in person. I've talked to him on the phone many times. So the fundamental rule in psychology is that you get more of whatever you focus on. So incredibly simple. But if all you're complaining about is being in poverty or being in debt or being alone or being the bad leg or just fill in the blank, you will see it everywhere and you will tend to attract more of it. And that's why we have to do things like, I love you, please forgive me, all of this to transmute it, to get out of it, or to become aware that that's what you're doing and take it to the next level, which in the attractor factor is to begin to start to focus on how would you like it to be? What would you intend to have happen? You know, if you're writing in your magic journal, painting the picture, that's the direction you want to go.
So we were talking earlier about, you know, when you look at what you want, look at why do you want that or what's that going to give you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the feeling behind that? So do you incorporate the feeling that you want into, like, when you write it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely incorporate the feeling, but not the rationale, not the this is going to get me such and such or any sort of intellectual gobbledygook, because I'm just digging a hole. I don't understand what it's going to get for me, really, intellectually. What I'm looking for is the body sensation, the physical happiness, the joy, the delight. The example I've given, I did a series called How to Attract a New Car. I think it's at attractanewcar.com. And I've told people that if you could imagine that you want this particular car, if you can imagine it's already in your driveway, you can open this door, walk out there and see it, and you can walk over to it and touch it, and you have the keys in your hand, and you can feel what it's like to have the keys, and you can get in the car seat and you can turn it on. What did those feelings feel like? those aren't feelings of how am I going to pay for it. Those are feelings of, man, this is wonderful. You know, it's a delight. I can feel it. I can sense it. I'm in the moment. I'm living it. And it feels great. That's the place you want to come from. Most of us don't understand the rationale why we do anything. You know, as a hypnotherapist, I see that all the time. There's numerous stories of people being put into a hypnotic trance and being told that, you know, at 2:30, you're going to walk over and open the window. You're going to forget that we gave you this command. But at 2:30, you walk over and open the window. And then we wake them up. Then we'll just kind of go about our business. And at 2:30, they walk over and they open the window. And you ask them, why did you do it? And they said, I just got real stuffy. You know, there'll be a rationale. They'll think of something to say, but they won't know the real reason. And that's true with all of our intentions. For the most part, we don't know what the real reason is. This is why I think it's so important to go to the question, how do you know if it's coming from ego or it's coming from the divine? To kind of use some conscious discrimination here to be aware if it is coming from divine, follow through at full speed. If it's coming through from ego, much like me saying, oh, I was thinking about getting a BMW Z4, well, that's sounding like it's more like ego. It doesn't feel like when the manifestation weekend was descending upon me, you know, and I felt inspired to follow through on that, completely different feeling.
Talk to me about frequency. So we write things down, and then between the frequency as well as in visualization.
Yeah, that's a common question. I don't have any rule of thumb for that. It's more, if there's any rule of thumb, it's going by your intuition. You know, if you feel like you need to rewrite it, go rewrite it. If you feel like you need to reread it, go reread it. When I was in the Mental Toughness Institute program, they had us write a vision, a one-year vision. In other words, it's 1 year from today, what all took place in your life on as many levels, which would address some of what you were talking about, as many levels as possible. You address all of it. And, of course, you're doing it with feeling. You're doing it with as completely as possible, covering all the bases. And then you reread it almost daily. But that was their advice. I'm more intuitive. I just say, hey, go with what is being nudged within you.
Just to speak a little to that, I wanted to get out of secured and unsecured debt completely. And I had to work out of getting out of not wanting to be in debt and being prosperous. And I developed not only writing this down, but also when I was doing something, whatever it was, and having that feeling of I want to get out of debt, I would say, okay, well, if I was perfectly abundant right this moment, what would I be doing? What in this moment would change? And just asking myself that question would completely change my thing. And then also forgetting about it to some extent, making peace with the fact that, yeah, I was in debt and didn't like it, but I was going to move forward, and what would I be, you know, if I wasn't? And have now moved to the place where I have completely got rid of $70,000 worth of secured and unsecured debt.
Okay.
When she was said that, it reminded me of something that I do. It says, I ask myself, who would I have to be? What kind of person is the person that's debt-free, that's whatever it is you want?
I was thinking about the core values issue. That might be a partial litmus test for knowing or recognizing the divine, if there's an alignment with core values, possibly. I don't know. It's a thought.
Yeah. And again, I'm trying to stay away from over-intellectualizing the whole process in mind. Now, that may feel perfectly right for you. It doesn't feel right for me anymore. I want to go directly to how would I like it to be if it fell out of the clear blue sky and describe the feelings as best of my ability and pretty much let it be at that. You know, and then be alert to where I'm being put, what situations are showing up, and knowing that I have to take action when they do show up. Those are parts of my agreement. Okay, any other questions? Questions? Oh, okay. I'm not sure how to expand on that. When I'm talking about, all of it's coming from trust. So let's back up. I told you that I was at the Dr. Len weekend that you had come to, the dinner and so forth, February 25th. And the next day we're having breakfast, and the whole idea about doing a manifestation weekend comes to me, and I don't want to do it. I'm resistant to the idea. I wait 3 days to see if the idea will pass. It doesn't pass, so it's now up to me to implement it. Now, actually, in the best of all possible worlds, I should have acted instantly. This is what I tell everybody else to do. Money likes speed. You got the idea? Jump on it. Send that email out. But it was more like, I'm overwhelmed here. I don't want any more work. Here comes another idea. I wait to see if it'll go away. It doesn't. All right, so I send out the email. It works, obviously. I mean, you all show up. Now, along the way, I find out that Dr. Len's doing a weekend in San Jose, the weekend before this. Now, part of me says, Don't go to that, Joe. You have a deadline to finish. You just finished the K9 concert promotion. I had been sunburned. I was still healing from that. I had lots of other stuff going on. I don't need to get on the plane. Plus, we had just come from Ohio for a wedding and so forth. I don't need to get on a plane and go to another event. But the part of me that's listening to out of the clear blue sky comes this invitation to go see Dr. Len again just before I'm about to do this seminar. I can't dismiss that. It has a different feeling to it. If I trust myself, if I say something, which I often say to some clients, if you had no fear, you knew that you would be safe, money was no object, it was going to work out perfectly, would you go do it? Well, yeah, I'd go do it. Obviously, I'd go do it. So I say yes, and I go to it. So again, it's a matter of paying attention to the opportunities. An email comes in about a mental toughness institute for weight control. I'd never heard of it before. Smells like an opportunity right after my intention. Next part of it, take action. The action I had to take was say, okay, how much do you want? Where do I pay? And book it. And those were also big things for me to do. A lot of trust involved. I don't know who those people are. I don't know what I'm in for. There's weekly calls that's going to go on. There's daily homework they want me to do. I have to report on everything that I am doing health-wise. But again, the feeling within me, my connection to the divine, if I can say that, was saying, that's what you do. And you know it, Joe. Doing otherwise would have been escaping what I knew to be true. So I think there's a degree of being honest with yourself. I've often used the phrase, be ruthlessly honest with yourself. Not just honest with yourself, but ruthlessly honest. Because most of us, I think Craig and I were talking earlier, most of us know what to do. It's a matter of, okay, you're aware of it, now you got to go do it. And I've already admitted that if it's something that I'm afraid to do, it's telling me to go and do a giant lotto hoax. It's going to cost me money and be possibly dangerous to my reputation. You know, not knowing how it's going to go, but it's bubbling up like this is what you're supposed to go do. I have to go do it. If it's something that's making me nervous, if I'm afraid of it, I know I have to go do it. A couple things that are going on. First of all, I have learned the power of my word. And so if I say I'm going to do something, I have to do it. I mean, there's no backing out of it. And this is an agreement that I made with myself because I know that the universe is watching. And if I say that I'm going to do something and then I don't do it, the next time I ask the divine that I would like to experience something, they'll say, hey, you lied to us before. You know, you said you were going to do something, you didn't do it. Now you're asking us to believe you this time around. So I don't know if that makes sense, but there's a certain credibility that I have with myself that I believe is a connection to the divine. So I have to go through with the things that I've said that I want to do. At the moment, I can't think of an incident. If one occurs to me later, I'll share it with everybody. But right now, can you think of something, Marissa, that I'm missing? Traveling. Okay, I don't remember. Oh, the Travel Bureau people. Yes, yes. That did go on for a while, and I did meet with them for a while. And I started to have a nagging feeling that this wasn't right, or it wasn't going to work out, or it wasn't right for me. I found a professional way to bow out by finding them a replacement for me in that particular case. And I guess another example that comes up, I was asked to be on a teleseminar program, one of the ones that you were invited on, and I don't even know if you ever ended up on it or not. You weren't on the first call. I was on it. And it did not feel right at all to me. But all I had agreed is that I'll get on the first call and we'll see how it goes. And it didn't feel right. It wasn't going anywhere. I was already busy. I didn't feel any out of the clear blue sky connection or reason to keep going. So I emailed everybody on the group and said, I'm just too busy for this. I wish you all well. No negativity at all. There was no obligation. I wasn't committed to doing anything. It wasn't like I signed a contract that I would be there. And bowed out. Wrote me a nice letter back and just said, thanks. Does that help on those? Yeah, I believe there's an inner compass in all of us. And what we want to do is follow that inner compass. And sometimes if it's turned you into a corner that you don't like because you're with people you're not in alignment with, I read Richard Branson's book recently, the one that's called Screw It, Just Do It. Screw It, Let's Just Do It. A brief little book he just came out with. Well worth reading. I really love Richard Branson. He says if he's in these positions where it's not fun for him to do something, he either has to find a way to make it fun or get somebody else to do it, or you have to dissolve it. And I think there's some kind of truth in that. You know, I got to find a way to make it fun because I already said that I was going to do it, or I got to find out why it's not fun, or I got to get somebody else to do it.
And I think for me, the way I would look at that is if there's something that I'm getting involved with and then I am scared of, let's say, the next step, let's say it's uncomfortable or, you know, gets your adrenaline pumping, but I think what you're talking about is if you actually feel like, yeah, this is just wrong. You know, it's different than fear. Like being if someone dares me to do something, that's not the same thing as, you know, hey, I've got to take this ropes course or something like that and jump out of a tree. Well, you know, I might be scared of it, but if I do actually feel like something is just bad or taking the wrong direction, certainly that's a way out. You know, it's real clear and easy to take. But that's where you just got to kind of trust your gut on that one.
I just thought of another example. Evel Knievel. We all know Evel Knievel, Great Daredevil and so forth. He wrote a testimonial for my book on Barnum in here somewhere. And he doesn't write very much, but I got a testimonial out of him. I talked to him, this was 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 12 years ago. It's been a decade or more. I talked to him quite a bit on the phone. And the first time I got him on the phone, I was just like I was a little kid again, just getting to talk to a superstar, because most of us had grown up with, you know, we probably bruised our knees and everything trying to do some of the stunts he did and wreck some stuff. Because he was a daredevil and he was a celebrity and we really admired him and he did some macho stuff and I finally got to talk to him on the phone. And I had sent an email to his website and told him about my Barnum book and saying that I'd like to meet or talk to Evel Knievel and see if he'd like to write the introduction or a foreword or a quote or something. And the next day I got a phone call from Evel Knievel. And he was in his convertible, he's in Florida, he's driving to the golf course and music's playing and he's talking to me on his cell phone. Which was, wow, big moment for me. And so I was in the wow moment. I was caught up in, I'm getting to talk to Evel Knievel. And because I was caught up in that ego rush, I didn't realize that he didn't care about me at all. He never once asked me about myself. He didn't ask me about my book. He didn't ask me about my workload. He didn't ask me anything about me. It was all about him. I still stayed on the phone with him. I talked to him again for the next 6 months. We would talk not very often, maybe once a week or once every couple weeks. He, of course, wanted me to write his life story. He wanted me to be the author of his book. He did read the Barnum book or enough of it to know that I could write, and he figured I had connections with publishers. But every time I talked to him, I felt uncomfortable. And it didn't dawn on me right away. Part of it, I was intimidated. I was talking to, you know, one of the first superstars that I got to hang out with a little bit.
This concludes Disc 2. Now please insert Disc 3.